everybody. Welcome to Reading Your Way to Heaven. This is Jason. As always, I'm here with Gabe. How are you?
Happy birthday to you. Happy belated birthday, Jason.
Thanks, man.
How was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Thank you for asking. Got to, first and foremost, shameless plug for my YouTube channel, Light and Heavy Pilgrimage. Going to get that off the bat because I was out doing pilgrimage stuff, which was a lot of fun. And got to go to New York. And you know the thing? Here's the funny thing about New York. Everyone, including myself, I'm totally guilty of this. The very stereotypical thing of New York. When people say New York, you think New York City. But New York as a state is actually really beautiful. Like, they've got mountains and trees and woodlands, and it's just beautiful.
And creeks and meadows.
And rivers.
And flowers.
They have the Olympic training facility for, I think, Lake Placid or something like that up there in New York. So they have the Olympic training up there, and yeah, it's just gorgeous.
Do they have stouts?
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But the other fun thing was they had this time of year, it was just starting to turn into fall. So the leaves were just starting. I wish, you know, if I was up there maybe another week later, it probably would have been even prettier. But it was still pretty just to start seeing that. And, you know, obviously weather-wise, you couldn't ask for better weather. Sunny blue skies, high of a 75. It was stupendous. So, how are you?
Well, welcome back.
Thanks.
Welcome back to Texas where it's
muggy.
Muggy and hot. Mm-hmm. But it looks like the tides are turning, huh?
Getting there.
As we are marching ever steadily towards fall. But yeah, man, I'm doing pretty good. Had a nice, fun day, busy work, and we had soccer games today, and the team won. So that's always a nice little
they keep scoring
way to go about it. The city doesn't, but the parents do, and the kids, of course. I mean, like, come on, they know. It's so silly.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3-0.
Nice. So,
yeah.
That's an easy way to keep score when the other team never scores.
You know, my 7-year-old was goalie for the second half of the game. And at the end of the game, I said, way to go. You didn't let a single shot in. Of course, the other team never spent one moment anywhere close to the goal. So there were never an opportunity. It was never in question.
I was waiting for you that she was like, Mutombo back there waving her finger. No,
right? So funny. Yeah. she totally got the joke and she rolled with it. She's like, yeah, I know.
I was a boss back there.
I know. Shut them out. Anyway. Let's jump into chapter 9, man.
Chapter 9.
Out of the Silent Planet, yo.
So, full disclosure, I was a little spoiled on this chapter. And I say that because the cover of my book, the version that I have, had, at the time I was like, after reading a few chapters, I'm like, I bet that's Ransom on this cover of this book. But I can never tell. I was like, what the heck is in that boat with him? And then I started reading this chapter and I went, oh, I bet it's this creature thing that's
so,
on the cover
in
of
fairness,
my book.
Some of your guesses were like based on this image that you knew ahead of time that he's going to be encountering some kind of something, right?
But
you see a picture of him in a boat with something.
Yes, but if you recall, my prediction was not this creature. It was something much larger and more menacing than what the creature actually is.
All right. Let's jump right into it here.
Okay.
So where we last left Ransom, he was passing out in this forest near a creek, for warmth. Remember, because the water is generating heat.
Yeah, living in a van down by the river. Sans van.
And he is going crazy. He's like talking to himself in the third person. And he finally passes out. And chapter 9 starts up. It was thirst that woke him. So he wakes up tired.
Okay, time out. Gabe, have you ever been woken up by thirst?
I have lived a charmed life, Jason, because I can't think of a time where I have been so unbelievably thirsty that it has ripped me from sleep.
I've been so thirsty. There have been
other things that have woken me up.
Sure. Of course.
Associated with thirst.
Okay.
But no, not thirst in and of itself.
I've been so thirsty I couldn't go to sleep. But never woken me up from sleep.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, this guy's really thirsty.
Yeah.
So he wakes up and then he sees, you know, his surroundings and trying to get his bearings going again. And it's just so funny because he's clearly delirious. Because even still, he's continuing on with his third person, you know. Like, wasn't there some stranger wandering around in the woods? Man, I'd be glad to encounter that guy. Oh, wait, that's me.
He's having an out-of-body experience right now.
Oh, man. Or how about, like, just, like, the way he switches back and forth between talking about this other person that's himself and then being that other person that's himself. So, like, he's saying, who was the man who had led him – who had led to a hot stream and tucked up in bed, telling him not to drink the strange water. Obviously some newcomer who didn't know the place as well as he, but whatever Ransom told him, he was going to drink now. So like, like back and forth, he's like, I don't know who this crazy guy is that told me not to drink the water.
In layman's terms, if it's basically someone like, you know, some wackadoo told me not to drink this water, but I'll drink it anyways.
It's just funny. It's funny to see the delirium there. And then it's also nice to know that he is able to drink the water and not perish.
Yeah.
That it seems to be fine to drink.
But it's not – it doesn't seem that pleasant because I know he talks about later on where, yes, he's very thankful that he can drink it, but he also curses that it's so hot. So I just imagine just drinking out of like a tap.
Yeah.
Tap water in the sink, but just turn on just your hot water and just wait until it gets nice and hot and just drink that.
Well, and so I was thinking like it's also effervescent.
Right.
So imagine like a can of sparkling water that is
been
just
sitting in your car.
Warm. It's sat in your car and you picked it up and maybe it's not hot, but it's definitely warm, you know, and you crack that bad boy open. And just seems so refreshing. But when you're so thirsty that you wake up.
When you get in your car and you have a bottle of Topo Chico in your car and you're so thirsty that you're like, I know this is going to be disgusting, but I'm so thirsty. I just gotta. And you just pop it open and the effervescent, man. It's just.
I like how he's like, it's fine. You know?
Yeah.
It was good to drink. It had a strong mineral flavor, but it was very good. I mean, I guess when you're that thirsty, it really doesn't matter. You know, it's just important to get hydrated. So he kind of like that helps though tremendously, as you can imagine, to help him come to his senses more. And
right.
He starts getting his legs under him and he starts trying to search for food.
Right. Of course, you know, continuing Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We've gotten thirst and now we need food. And so he starts, you know, but he also being very astute is going, I don't know what to eat. I mean, what pictured in my mind was like he woke up and he thought he was Bear Grylls now all of a sudden. Like he knew how to survive. He's like you said, you know, just that, well, I don't know who said I shouldn't drink this water. I don't know who told me I couldn't eat this food, you know? So he's like trying things like just haphazardly, you know, cutting parts of the tree off to try and eat it. And he realizes, oh, this is not edible, so I'm gonna have to chew it like gum, because it's that's at least better than nothing at this point. Going on and on like that.
You know what was amazing to me is just the imagery that C.S. Lewis is using here, even in the process of cutting off some of the tree, just how this tree is like vibrating and shaking, and just the movement of everything, right. You know, and again, lending to the perpendicularity of this world that he's in, that everything seems to be long and tall and thin.
You know what it made me think of, honestly, now after reading this chapter, it made me think of like really ginormous stalks of asparagus. Okay. Where, you know, when he says it's like celery, where, you know, you cut it, but it's not wood. It's this, like a vegetable, but then it has the sprigs on the top of the trees, which we'll get to that part, which was very interesting about those leaves. But just the imagery. He's still trying to paint us a picture of the world that Melisandre is, and that Ransom is seen, not only with the plants, but also the terrain and the mountains, or what he can only think of as mountains, but they're not, they're the terrestrial mountains of Melisandre, not the mountains of Earth.
Right, right. And it's in this search, you know, he doesn't get too far into this. It's shortly afterwards where he does stumble across this herd of creatures that he says are I guess what's similar to a giraffe,
right
but of course taller, more slender, you know, like everything else on this planet. You know, this herd of these large yellow animals that come and
eat every single leaf on top of those trees.
And these are huge leaves that he was talking about, right? That are just massive and kind of waving, that are a little bit translucent. That he was like, how is this even being supported? You know, that remember a chapter ago, he was like, this reminds me of like a water plant where the leaves are so large and broad, like it was the size of a boat or of a small canoe.
Right.
It made him think that, you know, like it's like a water plant to where it needed to be in water to support something so large. And this is where we come into the reality of, again, the lack of gravity or the lesser amount of gravity that's on Melisandre that allows this perpendicularity in everything, apparently, in trees, in its waves, in the rock formations, and even in the creatures, as we see from these giraffes and, you know, of course, the encounter he had with the Saurians that are these large kind of wavy creatures.
So don't laugh at me too much, but we 2 weeks ago rented from the library The Land Before Time, and because my kids had never seen it. And this reminded me of a part in the movie where the little children dinosaurs are walking together, and they finally found this great, they're looking for food, and they find these clump of trees that still have green leaves on them, and they're going to eat it, and they're so excited. And then all of a sudden these huge, you know, brontosauruses came with their long necks and come stomping through and just start eating every single leaf off the trees to where there's nothing left. And for whatever reason, that image came to my mind of how they were, describing of, you know, these, as you're saying, the leaves are so large, it's also, you know, blocking out the sun. But now that they've completely ate all the leaves off the top of these trees, that the sun now, it's completely open. The sky is open and I can see everything now.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's like, man, how do I do that too? How do I get up there? You know?
Can I climb the street?
And he is seeing this new, like you said, it's like opened up, like it's like a sunroof, you know?
Right.
He's not only able to have the sun come in, but he's also able to see some more of the landscape that the leaves were covering up. He doesn't get too far into that when, dun, 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 he has another encounter with A Saurian.
And so he's thinking again.
But I say encounter, but like,
right,
he sees one. There's no actual like contact made in any way whatsoever.
He's assuming that they're this particular one. And he's also, and rightfully so, I think, when he's like, who knows if there's just one of them here. You know, there was more than one down when I first encountered them, and then who knows if they're already circling, you know, trapping me.
Yeah, he doesn't know the intelligence of these right. beings, of these
he's
creatures.
He's assuming that they're fairly smart.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Because he's assuming that they're tracking him or that they're trying to find him.
Yeah, well, I think you can't
not think that,
right. You know, especially when you're thinking preservation. What I thought was kind of cool or interesting is in these different moments, like at the beginning when he started coming to, and even here, you've got these moments where there's time for action or time for movement or even an awareness of fear, but it's not emotional, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's able to keep a clear head even in the midst of this. Like he knows, okay, I've got to get away from this Sorn. I don't know who's around. I don't know if they're circling me. I just know I need to move. But it's not a panic like becoming this like mess, you know. It's calculated in some way, shape, or form. Like he's aware I have to keep moving. I have to, you know, I've got my knife in my hand.
Right.
And C.S. Lewis writes here that the fear had gone into action, you know, but that he was emotionally cool and alert and ready. So, I thought that was, you know, maybe that's his training from being in the military, or maybe it's just his disposition, you know. But yeah, no, I thought that was pretty cool how he's able to keep a cool head even in the midst of this interaction, you know, this reaction of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, it's that controlled breathing. It's being, as you know, as he says, alert, but keeping cool under pressure. So he takes off and he starts running downhill. And again, because of the way this Melicandre is, as you were saying, like if this was Earth, the angle of which he'd be running, he would be trying to basically be on his hands and knees and feet to climb down, or, you know, just to be careful. But because of the way the planet is, he's just going full throttle, and he's not worried about falling or any of that nature. So he ends up getting down, catching his breath, recovering a little bit. He's by this blue water. And then...
and this is where he's like, what does a guy have to do to get a cold drink around here? It totally reminds me of, you know, for our honeymoon, my wife and I, we went to Europe and we spent some time in France, spent some time in Spain. And my gosh, what do you have to do to get a cup of cold water over there? You know, like it's all just like warm.
They've
you know?
Never heard of a concept called ice. Like
I know, right?
There's no concept of that over there.
Are we just the crazy ones that you know, enjoy something cool and refreshing? I mean, clearly not. Ransom enjoys this as well, clearly.
Right.
You know?
And so,
man,
he's by this water and it starts getting agitated. And then he starts seeing this black object coming out from the water. And out pops this brand new creature that we are introduced to. Gabe, yeah. What the heck is this?
Well, it's a beaver, penguin, otter thing. Stoat. Do you know what a stoat is?
No.
I had to look it up. So I referenced a stoat and asked you if you had that in New York earlier. It's because there's this reference here to it, that the body of this creature is like a giant stoat. It's a, like a weasel.
Okay.
And it's like a large weasel is what T.S. Lewis is saying. So this being is got, he's, you know, 6-7 feet tall. So, his feet, I guess he's got large feet, but he doesn't have long legs. The body kind of starts kind of low, kind of like a penguin.
Right. Torso is massive.
Large, long torso. I love how just the different conglomeration of different animals here, you know, webbed feet, a broad beaver-like, or even a fish-like tail, you know, different webbed or clawed fingers. If you were going to come up with a new creature, you know, like, I think that's part of the fun here, you know, like, what do I want to imagine and how do I want to describe it? And so, like, yeah, this is like the perfect introduction to this type of a creature kind of popping up out of the water. When I first read this, I was like, okay, what is going on here? Like,
I feel like C.S. Lewis is like, I want to create my own platypus, but not the platypus, but, you know, like the platypus, like how God just have a sense of humor with creatures.
Or like, this guy is running from what he thinks is danger, but what if this is the real danger?
Right.
You know, as it emerges from the water and it's like, what is this thing? But shortly after that, Ransom, you know, of course he goes full on, like, lay perfectly still, you know,
it may be a T-Rex and don't move.
Right. Right. He can't see me if I don't move. Mm-hmm. Right. But as he's studying this creature, he notices, like, just even the mouth and the jaw and like, okay, it's not carnivorous, you know?
Right. But then again, he does say, but this is a different planet and who knows if they are not
carnivorous. And he's also not a zoologist. So it's not like,
I did like that part, but he's, you know, he's deducing, you know, using educated guesses here.
So he's able to, I guess with that, he's emboldened to kind of take a deeper look. And as that happens, the animal sees him and they start this kind of back and forth dance. But what really gets him though, is as he's watching this animal kind of before they really lock eyes is, the animal starts making these noises.
Right.
Right. And it's not just like the sounds my dog would make as she's, you know, scratching herself or biting her foot or whatever she's doing at night, you know. This is clearly some kind of a language. He says there's some kind of articulation to this. And so a quick pause here. Mm-hmm. Ransom is a philologist.
Right. Okay.
So this is someone who studies texts and oral and written records and looks at languages and, you know, kind of the really sees what there is to be drawn out from language, mm-hmm, especially mm-hmm. in the realm of literature or history. So when he's encountering like this new language here and that fires him up, this is what takes away or overrides any degree of fear he may have had. Because then now the curiosity is there. Mm-hmm. And so this is what starts really their dance, right? Their encounter with one another as they're both kind of checking each other out. You know, neither one sure if the other one is fully safe, you know, kind of scooting up and backing up. And I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, I like how he said, you know, his
interaction,
both him and the creature's muscles were always tense. Ready to move at a single twitch, no, on both sides. But going back to what you were just saying, this was another point I was going to make, was it reminded me of, did you ever see the movie Arrival with Amy Adams?
I don't think I did, no.
And Hawkeye, who plays Hawkeye in the Marvel movies?
Oh,
Jeremy Renner?
Renner, yeah.
Yeah, so it's those two kind of the main people. You need to see it. It's a great movie, but it's Amy Adams is this like linguistic person, again, knows language, knows ancient languages, on and on and on. And so Arrival is all about these aliens coming in to Earth, hence the name Arrival.
Oh, okay.
And then but these aliens are trying to communicate to humans. And so basically what the world is trying to figure out is, what are they trying to communicate? Are they friendly? Are they hostile? What are they trying to say to us? And so, you know, Amy Adams's character in the movie is it reminded me of Ransom a lot. And Ransom reminded me of her a lot, where, like you said, no matter whatever fear anyone may have had, and even the possibility of death. This is just so powerful that this is something out of this world, literally, that I'm so compelled to get myself off the ground, because I'm clinging to the ground right now. I'm laying face down because they don't notice me, but I want to try and understand and communicate and learn this language that I want to begin this dialogue. It just reminded me of that, and it's really cool.
I thought it was really, I don't know, a neat perspective here that in the same way Ransom is unsure of this creature, this creature is also really unsure of Ransom, you know?
Right.
I thought that was kind of cool too. Like, there's a degree of like, wait, should I be afraid of you? You know, kind of going on both sides. And right. Just to imagine that, you know, that, you know, we as the humans, right, we're seeing this creature for the first time as the reader, going, oh my gosh, is this a safe animal? But then this animal is staring at us too, or at Ransom, and having the same reaction. And of course it would, you know, and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But as they, I guess, overcome some degree of fear, it offers Ransom some water. And this is funny. Ransom notices this thing about halfway up its torso that he just assumes is its genitals. So he gets this shell, I suppose, with water, and he starts pouring something in there, and he's disgusted because he's like, is he urinating into that? You know? And he goes, oh no, that's like a belt. That's like his utility belt, right? That's like a pouch of some degree that has some kind of liquid he's pouring in there. Yeah. Oh, never mind.
I did see that. That was really funny. So, you know, the moment it seemed like this creature was going to run away, he's trying to communicate. So he's, as he says, you know, he's using the English language, like, come back, and we're, thank you. Thank you very much. And trying to build this dialogue. And he even writes, C.S. Lewis writes down some of the pronunciation. And this is where it gets like, whoa, where first and foremost, so the creature says, is the H silent or is it just Hross?
So I was saying Hross. Yeah.
Hross. Like, okay. Hross. That's how I was saying it too. I just wasn't sure if one of those letters was silent. But then.
I don't think the H would be silent, because later on he notices that the H is dropped on certain words.
Right.
So the H would definitely be pronounced. I did think in that moment, though, it's the, I guess the Hross is the name of this creature, or the species of creature. And it, if you notice, it's this creature that's engaging Ransom, trying to explain like who he is. And like in movies or in other places, it's the other way around typically, right? Like it's the human that's like human or man, you know, trying to go the other, but it's this creature that's actually initiating, you know, the language here, or initiating different terms, and I thought that was interesting. That's all. But yeah, go ahead.
And that makes sense, because, you know, typically it's, let's say, again, using the movie Arrival as an example, it's an extraterrestrial being coming into our planet. And here the rules are reversed.
That's so, right.
Of course, the native would want to try to be peaceful in trying to communicate and say, no, this is me. I'm a human.
And this is what you see around me, right? So I'm a Frost, and then around, like, grabbing the dirt, Chandra.
Right.
And Ransom's able to figure that out. Okay, that's the dirt. And then he figures out Malachandra, that's the whole planet. And starts to actually put together the phonetics of this language, you know?
Yeah, which was really fascinating to me. This goes to show how smart Ransom is, how quickly he's able to pick these things up, where, you know, in the meantime, the H disappears after C, and he, like you said, these little
the grammar rules.
Yes.
And the, you know,
it's incredible. But also how quickly this creature is picking up English, where he says, no, I'm human. And you see the creature like, ma, man, come on. And you're like, what?
Yeah, yeah. So clearly this creature at the very, at least right now, it seems friendly. And so that's like, okay, good. Finally, there's a little bit of a break, you know, because Ransom is going from like dangerous moment to dangerous moment, you know, like Sorns are after me too. I'm all alone in this place. I don't know.
I
don't
know
if I can drink the water. I can't eat the food, you know, to finally he encounters some kind of a friend who offers him something to drink. That appears, what do you say, appeared to be somewhat alcoholic, you know, so that was like a nice drink for him. Yeah. And then he even was offered some food.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, man, like a bean type of a food. And like things are starting to turn around for him here. Like he's getting settled. He's interacting with a creature. He's learning. He's in his element. He's learning a language. He's learning about a new culture. I think he's able to at the very least let his guard down a little bit, which, man, that's got to feel just a relief to a degree to interact with something or someone that doesn't want to end you.
So we are now getting back, and C.S. Lewis just loves to do this with the end of all these chapters, is to get kind of philosophical on us, where it's just, as he says, it's all dependent on your point of view, just how crazy it is. You know, some people would see this creature as a freak and everything else, where some would see he starts describing the sweet breath and the liquid eyes and you know, as though paradise had never been lost, and just all, you know, kind of getting philosophical on us again. But I think this definitely applies better in this chapter than it has in a previous chapter or two, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought the philosophy part was pretty interesting, though. Like, just the perspective there that if you looked at this creature like a person,
mm-hmm.
then it's like, oh gosh, this, you know, just it's really ugly. There's a lot of disgust there, you know. But if you saw it as an animal, as a creature, then you're like what you're saying, like how you are marveling at how quickly it was picking up the language, even like you see, oh wow, it has language. Oh, it's picking up my language. Oh, it's got tools. It's got a boat. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. And just the interesting, again, like the point of view there, that looking at it from one side, it's disgusting, but then looking at it from the other side, it's incredibly delightful. And I'm wondering too, like, I bet this creature's looking at him the same way too. Like, this guy's gross, you know, like he's short, you know, he doesn't have any fur or any kind of like hair all over him. You know, he's got no tail or whatever the case may be. Like,
right.
This guy's gross. Or, hey, this is an animal that's trying to interact and
right.
Like a pet, you know?
Exactly. He's looking at him like, oh, he's so cute. He's trying to communicate with me.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely the point of view is everything there. I thought that was a neat little like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And do we totally. Know how tall Ransom is? I can't remember.
I tell you what, he's not 6 feet. That's for sure.
Well, that was my thought was, you know, here's this creature that is between 6 and 7 feet tall. So going to your point about this creature being like, oh, how cute, you know, because, again, you are not the dominant person in this situation. Again, depending on how you look at it. Whereas, and if you recall, like when he saw the giraffe creatures, he was like, oh, I could subdue those. That humans, if we overtook this planet,
it's the
like,
hubris there, right?
Yeah, like we could overtake these and subdue these animals. But this is completely different. This is a sentient being now that can communicate and may have more to it than what meets the eye.
Yeah, yeah. This is not some herd animal. This is a like you said, a being that communicates and it has tools and If he has language, then he probably has community, you know, and, you know, who knows what else is in store here.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought this was a good chapter. I appreciated the shift away from delirium.
Me too. So I was also thankful it was a little bit longer. So obviously this podcast has been a little bit longer because the chapter was a little bit longer. My prediction is, again, I'll preface, I based on the cover of the book, I think he gets in a boat with him, with this creature. But here's what I predict, because I don't know this part. I predict that now Ransom's going to get in a boat with this creature and that he's going to go to the creature's village or quote-unquote city with other of the same type of the same species, but other of them.
Harassi.
I don't know what the plural would be for that.
I'm not sure either.
But that's my prediction, is that he's going to go visit some Harassis in their city. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've already been introduced to the boat. So, and he's already, you know, he's accepting the drink. He's accepting the food. So, you know, accepting a boat ride is not too far off, you know.
What's your other option at this point, you know?
Right, go back with the Sorens, really? I did like how he sees the boat and he's like, oh, it looks like one of our boats. And he's like, how else would a boat look, you know? For it to have any degree of function in water or I guess a body of liquid, it would have to look a certain way to be able to function. So yeah, that makes sense. So the humbling moments, I guess, continue to abound, you know, like, oh yeah, dummy. Yes. What else would a boat look like? Of course, you know? So anyway,
well, that will do it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. You can check out previous episodes if, you know, you're just now jumping on, you know, welcome. Feel free to start at the very beginning. Don't start with chapter 9 because you're going to be completely lost.
Yeah.
Start with chapter 1. You can find that on any podcast player as you found us. Please leave a, you know, 5-star review us, all that good stuff. You can find more at readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. And until next time, we'll talk to you later. Gabe, love you, bye.
Love you, bye.